Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Hare Krishna. So devotees, as I understand, we are reading from... It's not too loud for you, Chaitanya Das?
Not at all.
Okay. So we're reading then from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 26, Fundamental Principles of Material Nature, and we're reading verses 12, 13, and 14. 12 and 13 do not have purports. Let me just read through them first of all myself, and then we'll do 14 together. Mahabhutani panchaiva bhurapognir marunnaba tanmatrani chitavanti gandhadini matani me. Translation. There are five gross elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, and ether. There are also five subtle elements, smell, taste, color, touch, and sound. 13. Indriyani dasha shrotram, twadrigrasana nasika, vakaro charano medram, payor dashama uchyate. The senses for acquiring knowledge and the organs for action number 10. Namely, the auditory sense, the sense of taste, the tactile sense, the sense of sight, the sense of smell, the active organ for speaking, the active organs for working, and those for traveling, generating, and evacuating. All right? So now verse 14, let us do together. Mano buddhir ahankaras chittam iti antar atmakam chaturda lakshyate vedo vritya lakshana rupaya. Mano buddhir ahankaras chittam ityantar atmakam chaturda lakshyate vedho vritya lakshana rupaya. Mano buddhir ahankaras chittam ityantar atmakam chaturda lakshyate vedho vritya lakshana rupaya. Mano buddhir ahankaras chittam ityantar atmakam chaturda lakshyate vedho vritya lakshana rupaya.
Mano buddhir ahankaras
Mano, the mind. Buddhi, intelligence. Ahankara, ego. Chittam, consciousness. Iti, thus. Antaatmakam, the internal subtle senses. Chaturda, having four aspects. Lakshate, is observed. Beda, the distinction. Vritya, by their functions. Lakshana Rupaya, representing different characteristics. Translation: the internal subtle senses are experienced as having four aspects in the shape of mind, intelligence, ego, and contaminated consciousness. Distinctions between them can be made only by different functions, since they represent different characteristics. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The four internal senses or subtle senses described herein are defined by different characteristics. When pure consciousness is polluted by material contamination, and when identification with the body becomes prominent, one is said to be situated under false ego. Consciousness is the function of the soul, and therefore behind consciousness there is soul. Consciousness polluted by material contamination is called Ahankara. Okay. Manobuddhir ahankarash chitamit yantar atmakam chaturda lakshate bedo vritcha lakshana rupaya. The internal subtle sense, the internal subtle senses are experienced as having four aspects in the shape of mind, intelligence, ego, and contaminated consciousness. Distinctions between them can be made only by different functions, since they represent different characteristics. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharne Niravishesha Shunyavadi Paschacade Chitarne Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchakalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhubhya evacha, paditanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Hare Krishna, Anantakoti Vaishnavrinda ki jai. Devotees, so Lord Kapila is really diving more deeply into Sankhya, that analysis, the analysis of the different component parts of reality, both material and spiritual. And as one might expect, as he does that and starts going into a little more detail, it does become step by step a little more complicated, and one has to keep focused to really understand and keep up with what's being described. So here, this is very interesting. It's very interesting. He's just touching on the subject, really, or just beginning to get into it, about the internal subtle senses. In other words, our sort of psychological makeup, you could say. You could put it that way, at least for the people on the material platform, that would be a suitable term perhaps to use. But the internal subtle senses, we know from Bhagavad Gita, from the 15th chapter, that the mind is specifically mentioned there as one of the senses. It's not some other category of feature of existence, but it's actually counted as the sixth sense. Even in Western culture, at least amongst some people, there is talk of the mind as being a sixth sense, although it's generally, that sort of concept is generally taken to be more even sort of like occultish, or not really scientific, not so scientific, but more, you could say, kind of in the realm of paranormal. But here, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, according to the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, Lord Kapila, the mind, the intelligence, the actual ego, the real ego, who I am, and then the contaminated consciousness, the material apparent version of who I think I am, these are considered as the four internal subtle senses. Yes, anta-atmakam, internal subtle senses. So, and because they're very subtle, then unless a person is really trained and really knowledgeable about these matters, then the tendency will be, or may be, or will be, to not really understand each of them distinct from the others. Or in other words, possibly to see them as being one function, one type of thing, instead of four quite distinct things, quite distinct from each other. And this type of confusion, to mix up the functions of the mind and intelligence, first of all, but then even ego, the sense of identity, of like fundamental identity, these get very, they're generally just mixed together as being different aspects of one thing, or even just one thing, and contaminated consciousness, well, that's just something else altogether. I mean, it just doesn't, the concept doesn't feature. It means they don't even recognize it as existing, as a specific factor. Even one could say, in a certain sense, a specific entity in the overall picture of reality, which includes the different component parts. Yes, so this in Krishna consciousness, this is addressed actually. And here, Lord Kapila is at least in simple terms, just maybe in an introductory way, just mentioning these things and mentioning how a person may be able to, or can be able to understand each one in and of itself. Of course, the consciousness, one's awareness, one's consciousness, and these different functions have to become purified and freed from particularly passion and most particularly ignorance in order to be able to see these things. Otherwise, it's just a sort of a conglomerate. They're just lumped in together. Of course, the gross elements, and the related types of functions and things, they are easier. They're easier generally to understand as being and how they are being distinct from each other: earth, water, fire, air, and ether. As Bhagavatam explains, ether, what is ether? Ether means matter which cannot be felt, cannot be seen, cannot be smelt, and cannot be perceived by the gross senses. What is it? Tasted, that's it. And then gradually air can't be tasted, can't be seen, can't be what? Anyway, it can be touched. You can feel air, can't see it, can't smell it, can't taste it. It doesn't possess those characteristics. Whereas fire can definitely be felt, like air, but it can be seen. But it can't be tasted or smelt. Water can be seen, and it can be tasted. Rasoham apsu konteya, Lord Krishna says in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, I am the taste of water. And Prabhupada explains, water and the taste of water is so extraordinary, so special, so extremely special amongst different material things, that when Lord Krishna in the 7th chapter, it's the first place in Bhagavad Gita, not the last place, but it is the first place, where the Lord expresses and explains or mentions the different manifestations of his energies within this material world, culminating ultimately in the 11th chapter, Sri Sri Radha Radhanath Sri Giri Govardhan Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Ki Jai. Yeah, so culminating ultimately, really culminating mainly in the 11th chapter with the exhibition of the universal form, which is the actual visible tangible display of all those different features of Krishna's energy within this material world. But the first one mentioned is Rasoham Apsukunteya. I'm the taste of water. If it was not for water, if it was not for water, then everything would be finished, or actually nothing would have come into existence if it was not for water. And then air is required, then fire is required, the sun. But first of all, Krishna mentions of all the specific features of this material world which are displays of his special potencies, the first is water. Rasoham Apsukunteya. Yeah. So, but my point here is that these things are easier to understand. Earth. Yeah. What is earth? Earth means matter which can be seen, touched, smelt, and tasted. Yeah. That is kind of like, you know, a little subtle definition of what is earth. And water. Anyway, these different things. Yeah. Water doesn't have any fragrance, but if we take, well, not this drinking water, but if we take some, you know, just some sort of drink, or even if we take blood, if you take blood, blood has a taste. Anyway, perhaps we shouldn't say that. Talk about that. but some, like a juice, let us say a juice, a nice juice. It's liquid, so it has a fundamental nature of water, but it has taste. So in this sense of definition, what does it mean? It means that water has become mixed with earth. That's what it means. Some form of earth, because not all earth is equal. Yeah. Not all earth is equal. As the saying goes, which my father told me when I was a child, everyone is born equal, but some are more equal than others. So, yes. So water gets mixed with different things. And then it manifests different tastes of different juices and like that. So what it means, because taste is there, That means some earth is there. Some of some type of earth. In the same sort of same vein, or maybe we shouldn't use that term either, but in the same sort of theme, you have, and Prabhupada discusses this different times, you plant different seeds in the ground and you get different plants coming of different types. And at least if we talk about flowering plants, like your typical flowers, which they just grow and then, you know, they don't live for years. They just live for a short time. Then different seeds are planted in the earth. So there's the earth is there, but then they are watered. So it's a combination. They're sort of fed, cultivated with a combination of earth and water. Maybe some fire, some sunlight, you could say, some warmth. But it's mainly earth and water. And then you get these different flowering plants growing, which have different fragrances, as everybody knows. And of course, you know, nowadays, don't ask me why. Please don't ask me why. But you get nice flowering plants like roses. Of course, roses do live for some years, for many years too. But anyway, roses are famous for their flowers. When I was a child, and even now in India, generally, but definitely it used to be, the roses were really fragrant. They were really fragrant. But now the cultivated roses that we get, commercially particularly, generally they actually have no fragrance at all. It's just like neutral. But traditionally a rose, roses come sort of from the Middle East, isn't it? Somewhere out that way. And when the Westerners first discovered roses, they were amazed. Very beautiful, but very fragrant. And others, you know, I remember even when I first visited India, marigolds were fragrant. The marigolds had nice fragrances. Not as strong as the roses, but they had nice fragrances. They were nice. You know, in a mild way, but they were definitely nice. But even now in India, the marigolds taste sort of, well, not, roses at least smell neutral. Marigolds smell kind of unpleasant, if you ask me. And what to speak of many other of the colorful, but not nicely fragrant flowers. In so many cases, they actually smell unpleasant. Anyway, you know, the jasmine, there are different types of jasmine, which have different types of fragrances. And then other flowers here, of course, yet the yesterday, today, tomorrow has a nice fragrance, and various others have nice fragrances. It's coming from the earth. It is the contribution of the earth to the nature, the manifest nature of the flower. But just see, it's not coming from the water. The plants are watered. The fragrance has got nothing to do with the water, nothing to do with the light of the sun. It's coming from the earth. But the different flowers have different fragrances. Means due to the constitution of the seed and just the, dare I say, DNA of the actual plant itself, a certain type of fragrance or certain part of the general fragrance of the earth, a certain part is extracted by a certain flowering plant, whereas a different aspect is extracted by another. Anyway, these are just interesting little kind of side points, but they're interesting in terms of understanding the potency of the Lord and potencies of the Lord and like that. Because in Bhagavad Gita, as we've noted on a few occasions now, our acharyas, including Srila Prabhupada, they do make the point that even though the main thing in developing Krishna consciousness, and particularly in developing love for Krishna, the main thing is to develop a personal relationship in service. And in this way, enter into a relationship where there's exchange on the basis of service. But still, our acharyas and Prabhupada also makes the point that where we see in Bhagavad Gita in the seventh chapter, the eighth chapter, the ninth chapter, and in terms of being spoken about, particularly the 10th chapter, but then displayed in the 11th chapter, to develop some appreciation of the potencies of the Lord, not just the very personal aspect of exchanges through service, but just to get some idea of the scope of the potency of the Lord in so many ways, if approached nicely, can be and is described in Bhagavad Gita in order to be a stimulus for actually becoming attached to Krishna, appreciating Krishna, and taking Krishna seriously, and in that way developing more of a connection with Krishna, which as it matures step by step, it becomes based on service and interaction, based on service and the development of love in that way. So it's nice. It's nice. It's important. It's not just gyan, as the sahajiyas say. Bhagavad Gita is too much gyan. We just want to hear about the exchanges of Radha and Krishna. It's an important part of becoming Krishna conscious. So here, mind, I just checked, and here, of course, ego and false ego in the purport Srila Prabhupada focuses on, or that those are the only two of the four that Prabhupada really gives any description of, although it's very brief, then it's not at least right now in the following verses, these other things, they're not actually mentioned. But mind means that function, that thing, actually, that thing, that element. It's a specific thing, component of material nature, has that those functions of consciousness of receiving input from the senses. The eyes see, the ears hear, and the message or the stimulus goes to the mind. And the mind, because it's so connected with the senses, and the senses are so focused on enjoyment, then the mind makes some sort of evaluation. Will I enjoy more if I focus on the seeing, whatever I'm seeing, or will I focus more on the hearing, whatever I'm hearing, at the same time? What is going to give me a better stimulation? The mind decides on that basis. The mind does not decide on the basis of what is going to actually be better for me. Are there any detrimental aspects to getting into hearing this or seeing this or tasting this or whatever? The mind doesn't think in those terms. When thinking goes on in those terms, this is now the intelligence. It's now the intelligence. The mind is restricted to how does it feel? As in the hippie days, Some people, I mean, as sort of the hippie movement evolved or devolved, actually, the little saying came up, if it feels good, do it. If it feels good, do it. Ah, Krishna. It's just, that means we have come down, at least in the beginning of the hippie movement, there was this whole thing of analyzing what is middle class materialistic life like. I mean, you know, are we just becoming little cogs in the machine of the materialistic society and in that way just wasting our lives? And then a sort of, you know, it started actually with a PhD, with a professor. Timothy Leary was a professor, if I remember correctly, in Harvard. I think it was in Harvard, which is, you know, at least one of the three or four best reputed universities in the whole world. So it started like that. And it ended up with, if it feels good, do it. But the problem with many things that may feel good, if you do them, you get caught up in a vicious cycle, particularly intoxication. I mean, maybe not particularly, but definitely including intoxication. Yeah. If it just feels good and therefore you do it, that is a recipe for disaster, serious disaster in material life. So, yeah, but the intelligence has that power of discrimination in terms of value, making value judgments. But unfortunately in material life, the intelligence on one hand is not strong enough to assert itself over the mind and the senses and dictate to them to not just, if it feels good, do it, but to actually deliberate and make some real decision, worthwhile decision. The intelligence on one hand is not strong enough. On the other hand, the intelligence just doesn't have enough sort of ammunition or information for making the decisions in the best ways possible. Yeah, it's only when people come to Krishna consciousness that they become able that the intelligence becomes able to function properly and make actual correct decisions based on actual correct understandings of reality. So, and then there's ego and contaminated consciousness, or ahankara. Ahankara, mano buddhir ahankaras. Chittam. Chittam means the consciousness or the soul. Ahankara, of course, is false ego. Literally, ahankara means I am the doer. Literally, aham kara. It's just very straightforward. I am the doer. Unfortunately, I think I am the body. So here, false ego is distinguished from real ego. Real ego, ego of course is a Latin word. It simply means I am. I exist. Yeah. So real ego then means I exist, and what am I? I exist, but I'm not just a sort of an existent, nondescript something. I am a person. I'm an eternal conscious person of the nature of the eternal servant of Krishna. That's what I actually am. This is real ego. Whereas ahankara, the false ego, means that I think I am. I'm situated within the body, or a body, of some particular type. And I think that I am that. And therefore I think my life means to satisfy that, the body, and the mind, and senses. Well, senses, of course, means the body, and then the mind, which is closely connected, strongly, and even irrevocably connected, while we're on the material level, with the senses. Yes. So that ahankara means, as Prabhupada says, consciousness polluted by material contamination. That's what it is. So Krishna consciousness means to clear out, to clean away that material contamination, so the real ego, the real person, the eternal servant of Krishna, can stand up and then function in service to Krishna, even within this material world, utilizing the material intelligence, utilizing the mind, and utilizing the senses, and through them utilizing the sense objects in Krishna's service. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.